It's Football at 4 on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
Football 4, it's D-Mac with Nate Jackson. Brandon Marshall is a Oakland Raider. It was funny, Kyle was talking to me before the show, Nate, and he was like, you know, is Brandon Marshall like a traitor? Because he was thinking about, like, you know, some other Broncos that have gone to other teams, especially the Raiders. And, you know, Bill Romanowski, Lyle Alzado, just a couple off the top of my head. But I was like, it's an interesting question, but I think the concept of a sports traitor, I think you really have to be a traitor. Like, you have to make the decision.
Right. Yeah, it was made for him.
Yeah.
And plus, I feel like it's kind of lost its sting as the free agent. You know, the modern NFL is just about who's going to pay you, and everyone goes everywhere. There's not as much loyalty to the brand anymore.
Yeah, I mean, Brandon Marshall wasn't given an offer by the Broncos to stay here.
Right.
How can he be a traitor?
Right.
I don't care where he goes. He's got to get. He wants to have a job. So what's wrong with that?
Yeah, it's like if you dump your girlfriend and she starts dating your friend, can you really be mad? Well, yeah, you can.
Right, stupidly.
Yeah. You can be mad.
I mean, you can be, but you're dumb.
Right.
Why'd you dump her in the first place?
Why'd you dump her?
Now, if you're dating that girl and she starts dating your friend,
then we got problems.
There's other words for that, too, besides traitor, but we'll just stick with traitor.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you're probably well within your rights.
Yeah.
So sports traitors, to me, you'd have to find guys who had an offer to stay with their team and just went to another team that is their arch enemy. And then I'd even make the argument the money would have to be relatively close. Because if the money is just, like, ridiculous, you're not a traitor. No. So who really is a sports traitor? Like, who just basically stuck it to their fans? And there's probably not many of those guys.
Can't think of any. Can't think of any. But that Raider-Bronco rivalry is a good one.
Now, I'll say when Andre Iguodala, who was on the Nuggets and was, like, campaigning to be on the Golden State Warriors, you know, that's been, he was actually saying stuff behind the scenes. Like, when Earl Thomas is on the Seahawks and he's approaching the Cowboys right after the game in the tunnel about how much he'd love to be a Cowboy.
I think that happens with the Cowboys a lot because there's this, like, you know, this childhood fascination with a Cowboy team.
Yeah, but when you're dressed up in your gear and you go to talk to the coach, like, after the game,
well, a lot
like
of these,
right after the game.
A lot of these veteran players who kind of see the end of their career approaching, they want to make some moves. You saw Antonio Brown do it. He wanted out.
Is he a traitor? That's a good one.
Yeah.
That's a traitor right there.
To Pittsburgh fans, he probably is.
Right, because he had three years left on his contract.
And the Steelers and the Raiders are sort of these weird rivals, even though they're not in the same division.
I'll give you that. Steeler fans rightfully would say, up yours, Antonio Brown.
And they have.
Rightfully. There you go. That's a good one. There you go. Because he was amazing because he wasn't a free agent. He forced the deal.
But I think it's better for everyone, isn't it? I mean, they hated him. He hated everyone else there. He wanted out. Why not let him go? If he sticks around, is he really playing his best? Is he going to start more problems? I mean, why is that a problem that he initiated that process? And why is it a problem when players take this into their own hands?
That's a good question. Because I think fans want their players to love where they live.
They want it, but they also want Santa Claus to be real. And sometimes,
wait, what?
And sometimes you wait, just got.
I got to get to the bottom of that in a second. Jesse, you're on the fan. What's up, Jesse?
Hey, I just wanted to give you one of the biggest traders in Denver history, and that would be Andre Iguodala. Sold himself out when the Nuggets against the Golden State Warriors. But yeah, that's just my little two cents.
No, thank you. I appreciate Jesse. Yeah, he was ridiculous. That was unbelievable.
Got himself a couple rings.
Well,
though.
I know. Worked out for him, didn't it?
Yeah. Four quarters Iguodala.
I read today something like the new arena in San Francisco's already made like $2 billion and they haven't even had a game there yet.
How are they making money?
They've already sold, you know, all whatever, the boxes, the whatever.
That's crazy.
That's insane.
When is it supposed to open? Next year?
I think next year, yeah. I think. I could be wrong. Nobody wants to be in Oakland.
Yeah, the Raider games used to be special to go travel to and play in Oakland.
Would your parents let you go to those games?
No, I mean when I played for the Broncos.
Oh, right, okay.
But I wouldn't let my parents go to those games. In fact, if you show yourself, at least at the Oakland Coliseum, or if you show yourself as a Broncos fan, if you're wearing Broncos stuff, you open it up to a lot of attacks, verbal and sometimes physical. And so you got to go incognito. Neutral colors. Just wear black. That's fine. Blend in. Cheer in your head.
And your parents wanted to wear Broncos colors?
No, they didn't. But my mom, it was too much for her to be around that kind of vitriol.
Because they hated the Broncos so much.
And the stands were just brutal.
So even though it was so close, a relatively short drive for your folks.
Yeah, it was 45 minutes away.
You were just like...
My dad would go. The men in my family would go. My mom would stay home, watch it on TV.
Wow.
But then sometimes it would be blacked out because they couldn't fill the stadium, so they can't even show it on TV. So she didn't get to watch it. But it was better than sitting in the stands and watching all that debauchery unfold around her, because inevitably the Raiders would lose. And as the game would progress, the fans would get more and more drunk, more violent,
but
more
aggressive.
But you
didn't want to be a Raider growing up, right?
No, I was a Niner. You were one or the other. You couldn't be both.
Right.
It was the traitors. We called them the traitors. But then the Raider fans called the 49ers the phony winos.
So who really cares that the Raiders are leaving, by the way?
Well, the Oakland fans are diehard fans, man.
Mm.
Have you been to the black hole?
No, I have not.
Dude, it's very intense. I mean, you get grandmas flipping you the bird.
I got it, but... You know, it's just a bunch of guys with face paint and styrofoam masks. I mean, should I really be that afraid?
Yes.
Really?
Be very afraid.
All right, when we come back, James Palmer will join us. He was at, I think, DK Metcalf's pro day. He'll be with us after 4:30. And I do want to look at those sacks of Bradley Chubb to see, like, the impact of sacks. What is the quality of a sack and what does it mean? Stats that matter and stats that don't. As the Broncos move forward, what really does matter here? We'll get there next.
You're listening to The Drive on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
Walking home and talking low. It's D-Mac with Nate Jackson. You know, just off the air, we're talking about tough moments in sports. Well, James Palmer will join us in a little bit. And my kid had one yesterday. They were up on a great team, Mountain Vista, this baseball, and they were up 2-1, and they ended up losing 4-2, and it just was one of those tough moments. And so talking to my kid after the game, it was like, well, how do you feel about things? And he was like, well, you know, this, that, the other thing. And at the end of the day, he actually had an okay game, and there were a lot of players for his team that actually played really, really well. And so it was kind of cool because even though they lost and it was tough to lose, he did say he had fun. You know, it was like a lot of fun. So I think as a parent, you know, you ultimately like love hearing that, you know. And sometimes like even a loss like that at the, you know, amateur level can be more fun than just a team that you beat by 20 runs, because a team you beat by 20 runs, I mean, you know, what's that really all about? But we were having that conversation with pro sports. It's like having fun is hard, isn't it? Like, just having, when am I having fun doing this?
Winning is fun. And especially fun after the win. You just feel so good, man, because there's so much tension all week. Like, we got to win this. And when you actually do win it, there really is no better feeling than being in that locker room after a victory. But conversely, it's really, really bad when you lose a game in the NFL. I mean, it's really, you think you take it hard, D-Mac. You should be in that building, because for the rest of the week, man, that whole next week, it's like, It's like a a funeral around there. And everyone's looking over their shoulders, and, you know, all sins are forgiven when you win. You can have a bad game.
Who cares?
Coaches don't really harp on it. Mm. You don't even watch the film, really. You don't really go over it. Fine. You know, we'll correct a few mistakes, but we won. So let's keep moving. But when you lose, every little thing, you go back and that's the reason. And that one hurts. And if you 2, 3, 4 games in a row.
What's things like, yeah. Have you ever been on a team that's lost 4 games in a row?
No.
Never. Not for your time in the NFL.
No. No, I think the most we maybe lost 3 in a row. I don't know if we ever did.
So the Broncos lost like 8 in a row.
Just imagine those 8 weeks.
You tell me.
Horrible. Horrible. Miserable. Not only are you just bombarded with like negativity and stress, but you're also worried about your job. And then don't turn on the radio. Don't turn on the TV. And that's actually a skill to learn, to kind of tune it all out, to not be affected by the highs and the lows and the chatter.
Right.
Because every coach tells their players that. It's about what's happening in this building. We know what we are. We know what we've got. If we do things the right way, we're going to be fine. But we got to take it one day at a time, one play at a time, do the little things the right way.
Mm-hmm.
We know what we got to do. Let's go get it done. And then we break up into our meetings, and then we fine-tune it.
That's eight in a row. Can you imagine? I mean,
see, yeah, what I just said right there, that's not what's being said when it's 8 in a row.
You know, John Fox said, D-Mac, you're always a 2-game losing streak away from being fired.
Ain't that the truth?
Yeah, you know, it's funny, last year, for example, with the Broncos, so they won 3 games in a row, and they go from 3-6 to 6-6. Wow. Like, talk about, and they beat the Steelers, they beat the Chargers, they beat the Bengals, too. And that was the Bengals game was the only game on the road that they kind of had. The Chargers and the Steelers game were like, whoa, how did this happen? Like, they kind of pulled it out of the fire. But it was amazing at 6-6, you know, now it's 6-6, and they had the Niners coming up and only won a couple games. The Raiders coming up, who had a bad season. They had the Browns coming up. Even though they were better with Baker Mayfield, still the Browns at home. You know, all of a sudden at 6-6, you're like, "We this could happen here, right? Like, I mean, let's go."
Oh yeah.
And then you give up 200 something yards to George Kittle in the first half, and you're losing 20-0, and it's just like, what happened?
Kittle's in bits, man.
Yeah, Kittle's in bits. You know, I'm looking at Bradley Chubb's sacks. He did have 2 sacks in that San Francisco game. So this is why, to me, sacks are interesting, Nate. Third quarter, San Francisco's winning 20-0, and it's 3rd-and-15. And Nick Mullins is sacked for a 10-yard loss at the San Francisco 29-yard line.
Great.
Yeah. Yeah, it's good.
That's real good. You're trying to get back in the game.
Yeah.
You picked up some yardage there.
Yeah.
4th-and-24, and they're going to have to punt it.
They're going to punt it anyways, though.
Not if they get a first down. Not if he doesn't sack them. And Nick Mullins hits the guy across the middle.
Okay.
Kittles, who's having a great game, who was running wide open on that play.
You remember that play?
No. But it's a chance.
I'll give you that. Fine. You got to get back in the game. You're down. That's a big time.
That's a big play.
That's
you come off the sideline, your teammates are jacked.
You're pumped. We got a shot.
Yeah.
We're down 3 scores, but hey, we're getting the ball back and we got some momentum.
That's why we drafted you number 5.
That's pretty good. Also in that game, second quarter, San Francisco's up 3-0 at the time, 3rd-and-2.
8 yards. Huge sack.
Huge sack.
Wow.
Huge sack.
Starting to look like a good draft pick already.
And it was on the 4. I mean, it was about, they were about to score. So they're at the Denver 4-yard line, and you get an 8-yard sack. Now it's a field goal, 6-0, but better than 10-0.
Save you 4 points right there.
Huge.
Yeah.
Big time. Way to go. Week 11, 5 seconds to go in the second quarter. It is, what do we got here? It's a sack on Phillip Rivers. First and 10. They sacked Phillip Rivers, and the ball was at the Chargers' 39-yard line.
First down sack puts him in a real tough spot.
Well, like, half's over.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, okay. I mean, what was Phillip Rivers going to do? Throw I mean, it stopped him from throwing a 70-yard touchdown pass, I suppose. Or stopped him from getting in field goal position. So I wouldn't say it's, like, irrelevant.
Also, that's a really good positive momentum play to end a half on. And get in the quarterback's head a little bit. Get him to be looking around a little bit.
You should be a coach.
I'm telling you.
You should be the coach of optimism for a team.
You got to be optimistic if you want to win games. You can't be a pessimist and think you're going to go out there and get a victory, okay. D-Mac. Come on.
What are we doing? We have no chance.
Well, that's not going to work.
All right. Dude, you are a positive dude right there.
Well, I know how football games work, and if you're not being positive, you're not going to win, dude. And if you dwell on something, all is lost. We might as well pack it up.
Yeah.
What they say is in football, you got to have a short memory. You cannot dwell on the plays that just happened. You got to dwell on this play now.
You buy into that.
Absolutely. Because if you start feeling down on yourself and thinking about the block you missed, you're going to miss the next one.
Right.
Each play is so intense. It demands your
full attention. Can you really do that? Are you able to move on?
Yeah.
Were you able to move on?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. I mean, you have to. These guys can. That's what they all do. They're all able to do that because the ones who can't get weeded out. These guys are really good at moving forward. And the ones who can't.
Common trait.
Yeah. If you start dwelling on it.
So when we saw Paxton Lynch against the Raiders crying on the sideline because he got hurt and he was taken out of the game.
Literally crying?
Literally crying on the sideline.
Bit of foreshadowing there.
I mean, he had an injury. He came back from their injury. He was playing. He kind of wasn't playing well. And then he got really upset. He was out of the game. And he was really, like, he was crying.
It's an emotional game.
You are so positive.
Well, what I'm saying is, of course, that's a foreshadowing of a career that's probably not going to end well. And if I'm,
I mean, don't you lose your entire team then and there?
What I was about to say is, if I'm a coach and I look over and I see my quarterback crying, I'm not going to play him anymore.
And that's what happened.
Yeah,
Trevor Siemian went in, almost led him to a comeback victory, but Aqib Talib got himself kicked out of the game for ripping off Michael Crabtree's chain, and Brendan Langley, who admitted he doesn't like going backwards. Now he's a receiver, not a defensive back. That's a fun story. He was lost out there, and Raiders just were able to put the game away. And that was the moment where it was clear Paxton Lynch just would never, ever be a Broncos quarterback, and yet the Broncos still kind of hung on to him. The next move for the Broncos, could it be a wide receiver? DK Metcalf had a pro day. James Palmer from NFL Network joins us next.
Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan presents The Drive.
It is DMAC with Nate Jackson and James Palmer from NFL Network joins us. James, good afternoon.
Hey guys, just sitting in the Memphis airport, living life.
Yeah.
To the fullest.
So
yep, that drive from Oxford to Memphis is a real dream.
So you were at the Ole Miss Pro Day?
I was.
Wow.
Why wouldn't I be? Come on, D-Mac, there's players there.
How many Pro Days have you gone to this year for NFL Network?
Let's just leave it at I've been to two this week, Ames, Iowa, and Oxford, Mississippi.
Wow.
We'll just limit the pain just to this week. Yeah.
Okay. What did you learn today? What did you see today at the Ole Miss Pro Day?
A couple of things kind of jumped out. One, I mean, we all knew what DK Metcalf did at the Combine. I know you're a big fan of his. I think president of his fan club.
I was, but
both got the D's in the front of your name.
I've made some adjustments, and I'm a little bit more into N'Keal Harry right now, but I do like Metcalf. I really do.
Okay. Well, we all know what he did at the Combine, right? Blaze and everybody with the 40. But what people didn't really know, unless you looked close enough, was his cone and his 20-yard shuttle were the third and fourth worst times among wide receivers. I mean, that just shows you the guy can run in a straight line. Can he cut? Can he move? Those times were terrible. So he wanted to go out there, and after I talked to him after the pro day, he's like, man, I couldn't finish with times that are worse than Tom Brady's, or I'd kill myself. And so he did go out there and did improve really, he went dropped to a 7-2 and a 4-3, which really got him from a 7-3-8 to a 7, from a 4-5, which was brutal time. So he dropped in both of those, which helped himself a lot. And he's actually looked really good. But I think the other guy there, and if you talk to people in that building, they know the freak that DK Metcalf is. But A.J. Brown, I think, is a real player. I mean, at 225 pounds, that can play inside the slot, can play outside. He's visited with pretty much everybody. I mean, he was with the Patriots, Colts, and Giants last night. He's been with Green Bay, the Bills, the Eagles. I mentioned those three other teams. He's got a bunch of other visits lined up because people love versatility in the receivers now. And when Metcalf went down this past season with the neck injury and missed half the year, you saw A.J. Brown play in the slot, and then you saw him play outside. And with his ability to have really, really strong hands, is really great after the catch, he's a guy that a lot of teams are really high on because of the versatility that he brings. It doesn't mean Metcalf's not going to be a top 15 pick. I mean, that's something that he brings with the size and speed that really is so rare. The drops have been an issue with Metcalf. That wasn't an issue at the pro day. They both performed really well. In sense of the Broncos in a little bit, I would kind of keep your eye on their tight end. Okay. He had a really, really good pro day. And Dawson Knox.
Okay.
He had a core muscle injury, after the season and had surgery, and has only been training for about 5 weeks now. He went out and ran a 4.51 as their tight end. And he's a bigger kid, and he caught the ball well. He ran well. He should be probably like a second round, third round pick. And we know John Elway has been repeatedly saying, I have been searching for a tight end. That could maybe be a kid after these first, if they don't go, you know, with those first couple of Iowa guys in the first round, you know, if they want to jump at one of those guys, that maybe be a surprise, but I could see it happening. If they want to wait, this could be a kid that they can maybe get second round.
Hmm. So those receivers, in addition to running and getting time, they were running routes, right? So how extensive were those route trees they were running? And tell us what you saw in his cutting ability, his ability to get in and out of breaks, and how his hands looked.
Yeah, we saw two different types of guys go out there. And I think, obviously, these are always scripted, right? And our old friend from the Denver Broncos, Tyke Tolbert, you know, now the wide receivers coach with the Giants, was putting these guys through the gauntlet. And he was the one, actually, I posted a couple of videos up there trying to do press coverage against DK Metcalf, where Metcalf said, I told him I'm going to run him over. Which, I mean, with his size, he could do pretty much whatever he wants to a corner. But they really had two different types of routes out there that you saw. A.J. Brown do a lot of the double move, a lot of stuff underneath, inside, show you that he can move in the middle of the field and find his space and be able to move in those tight quarters with a lot of quick in and out of type of stuff. DK had a lot more deep balls, slants, the stuff that he's, I mean, when you do these pro days, what's the number one thing you want to do? You want to make both these guys look good, right? So you're going to run the stuff that they're great at. You're just hoping their scouts and coaches go, hey, I want you to go run this. Can you go do this for me now? You know what I mean? So what he really also excelled in, and there's a particular video that I posted on Twitter, just to plug my own self, at James Palmer TV. Yes. There's a route in the end zone that he has an out route that he's working off of press first that I think is a better showcase than some of the deep stuff that he did. So he had one drop, a tough ball in the corner. Outside of that, I think they both performed pretty well in that scripted sense, because neither one of them were going to do, obviously, the 40 or a lot of the bench stuff or anything. The one thing that I will say that I've never seen at all the pro days I've been to, when everybody's in the weight room and everybody's watching and encouraging their teammates to lift, A.J. Brown, DK Metcalf, nowhere to be found.
Really?
I watched them walk off, do their own thing, went in another room. And I'll say this, when I talk to scouts over and over again, they always say the same thing. I want to see at these pro days how you're encouraging your teammates, how you treat the guy that gives you water. You know what I mean? That type of stuff. I will say this. Like, they call themselves NWO. I mean, it's tattooed on them. It's like wideouts with attitude or something. and they definitely have a group. They have a belt. They got some swagger, but I've never seen guys just leave the pro day in the early portion to go do their own things. God knows where else.
Well, that's really interesting.
Just not be there.
When we were up in Laramie last year, Josh Allen, he didn't need to do anything in the gym, like where the weights and all that. He didn't do anything. There was no reason for him to be there. Everybody was there for him. And his throwing session was in their indoor facility next door. Josh Allen was at every single thing for every single player for his Cowboy squad there. Every single thing.
Yep. I'll do you one better.
Yeah.
Saquon Barkley at his last year, he didn't do anything. He was at every single thing. When we talked to him after the pro day, listen to this, nobody sent a running back coach. So nobody was there to put him through drills. So he was just there because everybody just knew how good he was, right? It was almost like a foregone conclusion. Saquon is this good. Nobody even sent a running back coach. So he essentially just watched his teammates for an entire day.
Wow.
And just encouraged them the entire time and had nothing to do. And that's a difference. These are the things that scouts look at, man. Yeah. They really are.
Yeah, I mean, when everything's equal, that's a really good little tidbit there, James. That's interesting. We'll hold on to that one. All right. And so where are you? When are we done with these pro days?
There's only a couple left.
Yeah.
There's a couple left out on the West Coast. I think you got Stanford, Washington State. That's kind of about it. Everybody is kind of winding down. I was surprised, really. I mean, there's also a tackle here in Craig Little who's got some tremendous NFL blood and was one of the best high school prospects coming out of Allen. He actually played with Kyler Murray at Allen in down in Texas. And, you know, he's another guy that could be early second, late first.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a lot of players here, and there was not a single head coach or a single general manager at this pro day. I was shocked. I mean, maybe they're a little worn out because a lot of guys went to Arizona State after the owners' meetings and then went down to Houston and, you know, had those two back-to-back. But I was shocked with these two big-time receivers and a tackle and then a tight end that's kind of making some noise, and not a single head coach or GM was here.
Now, and just for the record, too, I read today there isn't a plan for DK Metcalf to meet with the Broncos. Is that right?
And when I talked to DK, the interesting part is all the teams that I listed for you with A.J. Brown, I said, all right, you got to have a ton of interviews lined up, DK. What's your travel schedule like? And he goes, I got two right now. I was shocked that he said two. It was Ravens and Bills. And he said, those are the only two I have on the docket right now are the Ravens and the Bills. And I was surprised by that because A.J. and I were trading airport secrets about how he's going to get around over the next month with all the visits he has. And DK said he has two right now. Obviously, that can change.
Yeah.
Teams are still figuring out, you know, they have a limit on their visits, so they're still trying to figure out what they want. And a number will probably go up, but I was surprised it was only at two.
Wow. Okay. Good stuff, James.
Yeah.
Really appreciate the time. Are you coming back to Denver, or are you headed somewhere else?
I'm coming back, guys. I'm coming back.
Okay.
I think we're going to see something happening in Denver, Tuesday maybe? We're starting up early. Here
I
we
know.
Go.
Can you believe that? That is
unbelievable.
Crazy. Yeah, because the Broncos get to start, 2 weeks early?
They can start early, yep. And you got to think about the situation that the Broncos are in. They have a new head coach, so obviously they can start early, and they're going to want to start early because they want to finish early because they got the Hall of Fame game. So they want to give their guys some sort of break. I would think that, you know, in June, they're going to be like June 5th, 6th, 7th, somewhere in that range. They're going to finish early because they have to start so early because of the Hall of Fame game.
All right, great stuff, James. See you next week, pal. Safe travels.
Guys, yeah, thanks for entertaining me in this airport. I appreciate
it. Okay, thanks, James.
One restaurant.
All right, keep up the good work, man. That's some new information for you to chew on there.
Yeah, let's think about that. Big deal or not a big deal? Well, we'll get to that. And
big deal.
My man, big deal?
Oh, yeah.
We'll get to it. My man John has a very profound question. Very deep question from our guy John. John, hang on. We'll get to you next.
It's The Drive on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
D-Mac with Nate Jackson, and it's really been awesome having you here this week. And you know what? You're a very positive person. Even though when I was getting a little cynical today because I'm listening to Mike Evans in the morning, it drives me nuts. But you know what? You're telling me basically every sack is awesome for intangible reasons, and maybe I was looking at it too analytically. And then you're like, you know, cause I look at this sack, what does this matter? It's before the end of the half. It doesn't, you know. And you're like, no, we're in the locker room now. We're jacked up.
That's right.
Well, what about this one? No, that's a big deal because we're on the sideline now. We're fired up.
Yes, it's true, man.
And I'm like, okay. I mean, all right. What about this one where the quarterback just was like falling down and you put your hand on big sack? Emotional pick me up.
You're right.
All right. Then I'm realizing I'm working here this week like the most jacked up man in the world. Just like pumped.
Right? Don't you feel good?
A little bit.
All right.
Feeling a little better.
Let's go out there and get a victory.
Yeah.
There's nothing we can't do.
You must have had some good coaches. You must have had some real... I'm going to guess you had some pretty good parents, too. I'm just going to guess you had a lot of positive influences in your life.
Oh, yeah. Great parents. Loving parents. Encouraging. Positive. But as far as the sports goes, really great coaches. Coaches who cared about their team as kids and wanted to see them succeed and instilled a sense of camaraderie and loyalty. And trial and error also, seeing what works and what doesn't.
You must have been friends with Jake Plummer.
Yeah.
You had to have been friends with Jake Plummer.
Yeah,
you and Jake are like the same dude.
He's a great friend of mine.
That doesn't surprise me at all. I mean, he really does have very similar traits that you're showing. Would you agree with me on that? That you guys see things kind of the same way?
But I think you'd find that with a lot of football players and a lot of athletes. Because if you don't think it's going to get better and you're going to succeed, and if you hit a rough patch or you get knocked down, if you don't think you're going to go reverse that and get on the right track, what are you doing here? Get out of here then. Hmm. But if you're going to be here, let's be positive. Let's have fun. And there's nothing more fun than winning.
All right.
let's get out there and show them.
Right attitude for the weekend.
That's right.
Hey, John, you're on the fan. What's going on, John?
What's up, Heinz Heat?
Hey!
So, you're probably going to talk over me and put me on mute. I get it. It's what you do. But
that is such a negative attitude,
yeah.
John.
What a good start, John.
Maybe I'm going to listen. I think you were trying to insult me right off the bat, but I didn't hang up on you. What's your... I'm feeling
point
positive,
proven.
John. I'm feeling positive.
Point proven. Point proven.
So, go ahead.
All right, here we go. All right. So, man, you got to talk to your son. Like, I get competing is fun. Losing is not fun. There's nothing fun about losing.
Is that it?
That's it. Because what you teach your son is what the rest of our youth is being taught. What is fun about losing? What's fun about second place?
Well, in their particular case, they were playing a team that's one of the top teams. They won the state championship last year. They had beat Cherry Creek by 13 runs 2 days before, and it was a dogfight all the way to the last inning. And they surprised a lot of people. And in my son's particular case, you know, he had a solid game, and he was proud of the rest of his teammates.
So the Rams, the St. Louis or the Los Angeles Rams, at the end of this year, they surprised some people, right?
Yeah, but John, hold on. I'm not trying to talk over you. My kid's 16 years old and just playing high school.
I get it. So it's okay, because you're 16, it's okay to lose?
You're going to lose.
Yeah, I think it's okay to lose. When
you're always going to lose, but what you say, he had fun losing. It was fun. We had fun. We lost, but it was fun. There's nothing fun about losing.
John, what was the last competitive thing you've ever done?
I went to work today.
Was it fun?
Did you win?
Maybe.
Was it fun?
I get you don't compete at work anymore, but I went and competed at work today.
Okay, did you win?
I promise you I won. That's why I started drinking at 12:30.
All right. Oh, that's all what right.
It
is.
We love you, John. Thank you.
Thanks, Johnny.
Appreciate it.
Hey, man. I think fun is a very broad term as well.
I think at the end of the day, man, if you're not having fun, why are you doing what you're doing? I think
especially in high school, man.
Yeah.
But his example about the Rams, I guarantee you everyone on that team said they had a fun year.
At the end of the day, sure. Yeah. They might have been disappointed.
Of course they're disappointed in the end, but they had a fun year. And did I win every game? No, but I had a fun career. I had a fun time playing sports in my life, and you do learn a lot from losing. You actually learn a lot more losing than you do winning. And you can internalize that in a way that might make it feel like fun, especially when you're going through a battle with your buddies. Because because I guarantee you, some guys come back from war and say that was fun. And they lost some men, but it was fun.
I don't know about that.
Probably. No, it's true. Because you get used to a certain lifestyle.
Okay.
And then they come back here and they're walking through the grocery store and they're looking at cereal. That's not fun. Dodging bullets, that's fun. If you get hit in the shoulder,
dude, oh well. Dude, I don't know about that, man. You're throwing some weird examples out there.
I'm just saying, man.
I'm not sure where to go.
The word fun is I think it's probably different for a lot of people. And when you're in sports, winning is fun, of course. We all want to win. But there are fun moments of losing games that you can hold on to in the end. Like when you make a great play and score a touchdown, that's fun. You might lose, but you might think back about that fun play you had.
Yeah, I mean, listen, my kid wanted to go to practice today, and they want to do better.
Of course.
It's early in the season. They're like three games in. I mean, this is a long season ahead of them.
We talking about practice.
And so in terms of, you know, he said, this could be a great springboard for us to, you know, really bond us together. And I'm like, ah, that is awesome, man. And I heard people, there's no such thing as a good loss. I don't know. We'll see.
There's some coaches who want to see, you know, when things go wrong, when you lose, everyone's just mad, you know. Why is anyone laughing in this bus? We just lost. No smiling.
Right.
You get that. You get that a lot. And a lot of times those coaches are not successful. In fact, I've been around those coaches. I had one of those coaches in high school. We went 0-9 that year when we were told, don't smile when you're losing.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a line you have to straddle there in order to get the most out of your players.
Yeah, because you don't want to be like loosey-goosey, you know, during the games itself. You know, you don't want to be the Broncos a couple years ago and Menelik Watson's asking his girlfriend to be his wife during the preseason game. Not even like afterwards, like during like the fourth quarter or something. You know, that's a loose moment right there. You got, well, I don't know, you got your teammates out on the field slugging away trying to make the team. Don't you want, this kind of goes to this story that James Palmer shared with us that we found out DK Metcalf, instead of being there for his teammates while they were going through their stuff, was off, doing whatever he wanted to do, not paying attention to his teammates while they were doing drills that he wasn't. What'd you think of that story?
I think it's a little bit disconcerting, but I would think more so what I learned from him about DK's route running and the balls and the routes they chose for him to run. It shows a very limited capability of running routes for this man.
Right.
And not a lot of good lateral movement and not a lot of confidence in his lateral movement.
And then you find out not that many teams are interested.
Yeah. It's
so that maybe if I was to pick a guy who is screaming at me right now, a lot of hype, going to fall through the draft, DK Metcalf, there's some huge alarm bells there. Now, it only takes one team to love you, right?
Yeah.
So, who knows?
He may slip the second round, though.
You know, it would not surprise me. And not that I don't think he's got an amazing amount of talent, but I definitely have moved on to say, you know, if I had to choose, I'd choose N'Keal Harry over DK Metcalf.
Well, we're doing our homework here.
Yeah, yeah. So I reserve the right to change my opinion right up until the moment of the draft as new information presents itself.
As any intelligent man would.
Yeah, you can't get yourself in a shoebox and just say, this is it, that's it, the end.
No.
You know, there's a whole process here so you can make these evaluations. It doesn't mean these guys won't be good players in the NFL. And they're certainly, all these guys we're talking about are going to be drafted.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're not talking about any crazy underdogs here.
Right.
Mike Evans may have a roster full of, you know, crazy underdogs that can work as a backup quarterback for the next 10 years. But, you know, we're talking about guys who are actually going to play.
And let's remember these receivers take a couple of years to develop. They're not going to come in and just be running the show.
In terms of what's on tap in Denver sports, there's a takeaway from the Nuggets game from last night that I think is critical. And the Avalanche. Look at the Avalanche. We got some big stories there. We'll check in on all that right after we hear from Mark Schlereth.
It's your daily exclamation mark with Mark Schlereth. brought to you by Shomp BMW.
All right, getting a little blowback because I said the Broncos are closer to the Kansas City Chiefs than they are the Oakland Raiders, and all you Chiefs fans are like, whoa, what? We got Pat Mahomes. He's magical. Listen, here's the deal, you guys. If you end up losing Tyreek Hill on your offense, that dude is a difference maker. And don't tell me, oh, Sammy Watkins can really run fast, or DeMarcus Robinson or Sammy Coates is going to be the difference maker. That dude is a difference maker. And if you lose him on your offense is hindered dramatically. And I understand that Travis Kelce is great, but the coaching staff here in Denver will understand that you've got to be able to stop that tight end, and they'll have a plan, unlike San Francisco last year when they apparently didn't know that George Kittle was on the team. This was the 31st ranked defense overall last year, and they lost their two best pass rushers in Houston and Dee Ford, and they lost they're kind of emotional leader at the safety position, guys. Of course the Broncos have crept closer now that they've got Flacco. They still have work to do. They got to get a better offensive line. But are they close to the Chiefs? You're damn right they are, and especially if Tyreek Hill gets bounced for the majority of the season, they're right there neck and neck with the Kansas City Chiefs. So we'll see how it plays out when they get their cleats on the grass.
Mark Schlereth and Mike Evans, Monday morning at 6 on Denver Sports Station, 104.3 The Fan. We'll be right back.